Ooh, welcome to the Watson Weekly. I'm your host, Rick Watson.
Hey, it's Jessica Laseski. We're back. It's the weekend.
It's Friday.
Friday, Rick. Friday, TGIF.
I'm excited. So here's what we're talking about today, Jess. First up, Anthropic confidentially filed for IPO. Second, USPS and DHL are new besties. They signed a $10 billion long-term contract. And our mega story this week, Salesforce revitalization. Don't call it a comeback. Is commerce cool again at Salesforce on the heels of the Contentful acquisition? We do have a newsletter here in case you haven't heard, watsonweekly.com. It matches the name of the show. That's
right.
Convenient. Just go there.
Yes, don't make it hard. Like and subscribe. Sign up. You only get the best news here.
If we give you the worst news, you don't know the difference anyway.
That's right. Exactly. Well, Rick, I am going to bring us into the forefront with this Anthropic confidential filing for the IPO that is not so confidential anymore because the whole world and the internet is talking about it. So here's the thing, to catch you up, Anthropic, the AI lab behind Claude, your new bestie, has confidentially filed for a public offering.
Ooh.
Paperwork went to the SEC on June 1st. It's a confidential filing, so it lets the company kind of keep some things secret, under the wraps, like financial results, sensitive information, so that the SEC has time to complete its review.
Yeah. So they don't have to like release their books to the public.
That's right.
Until it actually happens.
That's right. Like, this is kind of, you know, a secret little code and all to be revealed in the future. Also comes off a big week for our friends at Anthropic. They just raised $65 billion in Series H.
Wow.
That pushed the valuation to $965 billion.
H for and hello. That makes it the,
yes, a lot of Bs, a lot of dollars.
Yes.
Dollars, dollar bills, y'all. And, you know, the $1 trillion is where people are circulating. But here's why that matters. Because this now has made the company more valuable than OpenAI, which in that rivalry is pretty interesting.
Yeah.
They're, you know, now out to market faster than OpenAI. And Rick, I'd like to go in the way back machine and kind of talk about like how we got here.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, by January 2024, they were already at an $87 million run rate.
Yep.
One of the biggest things in the company's history is that Claude Code started as kind of a prototype around the February last year. It launched May 2025 in kind of like a public release for agentic coding. By November, it had already hit a $1 billion run rate.
Insane.
Which is like bonkers crazy.
A lot of SaaS companies would love that trajectory.
I mean, in the last year and a half, there's really been no one, I think, in the AI space that it's executed better than Anthropic. And it's pretty easy to see why. They focused on developers. They made Claude Code one of the... It was like a feature that they didn't know it was going to be a feature. There's a lot of like UI, like web page based chatbots. Claude Code is in like a terminal, which it's like the geekiest of the geeky ways to program.
Yeah.
And so they built that and people loved it. And they didn't know if it was just going to work or not. And it did. And so they ended last year at like a $9 billion run rate. They raised Series G earlier this year. They raised Series H, as you mentioned, in the last month. And that $1 trillion number should sound familiar because that's exactly what Elon Musk is trying to raise with the SpaceX IPO. He's combining all his companies together. So Anthropic doesn't just need this for legitimacy. They also need this for funding because they're not Google. They're not Amazon.
Right.
They didn't come from... They're not old money. They're new money. Right. Right?
Yes,
and so
they don't have the trust funds sitting over here.
It's, you know, they don't have the Bill Gates or you know, the Jeff Bezos behind them or the Sergey Brin. They have the sort of the expelled OpenAI co-founder misfits that became Anthropic because, you know, Sam had a falling out with apparently everyone.
That's right. That's right. Which is kind of a Sam thing to do.
Yes.
But what I think is so interesting about Anthropic, Rick, is it felt like, I'll own it, I was kind of Claude who dis?
Yes.
Like, where you been? We weren't even on the scene in a real meaningful way. OpenAI was dominating the headlines. You had Gemini popping up here and there.
Yeah.
Even Perplexity had a lot more, I'd say, buzz around them.
Right.
And it felt like they just burst onto the scene last year and even early this year, like a quiet little ninja. Right. And they were doing some ninja related things, you know, like throwing some like stars, right? Because behind the scenes, like you said, they were really building and setting a path for the space that they wanted to own, which was enterprise. They did a $200 million deal with Snowflake that essentially put the access to Claude Code in a secure environment to so many developers. And then they had the benefit of the holiday downtime as some of their newer models came on the scene. And that's when you started to see vibe coding everywhere, all over the place. And then the SaaS market started to tank as a result of this fear. And then we just hear the results last month where they finally overtook Anthropic in terms of enterprise share. So kudos to Anthropic. They're on a little tear.
They're doing a good job. Speaking of ninjas, who doesn't love Liam Neeson and Batman Begins in like the scene where they're coming? It's such a great movie.
So underrated. Go watch it. It's quite something. It's Liam Neeson in his best. It's like Taken.
He plays
and all
the same character over and over. He has
and
a
he
particular set of skills.
Yeah, it's called owning a lane, Rick, and he owns it. So this is the starting gun. It's not the finish line. The confidential filing gives Anthropic the option to go public, hasn't committed to a date, don't know what will happen. And everyone's just kind of waiting on the edge of their seats to see the S-1, get into all those fun little details.
Tax compliance is one of those things that sounds manageable until it isn't. You add a new channel, you expand to a new state, you start shipping internationally. Suddenly, the complexity catches up with you. Tariffs, duties, VAT, jurisdiction rules vary everywhere. And a customer just got hit with an unexpected charge when their order arrived. That's not just a compliance problem. It's a brand experience issue. Avalara is how I solve this for clients. I've been recommending them for years. When we help clients select new providers, Avalara is always the call. Works right inside Shopify, BigCommerce, WooCommerce, wherever your brand lives. Accurate tax at checkout, visibility into tariffs and duties before the order ships, and fewer surprises for your customers. If you're scaling into new channels or new markets, don't let the tax layer slow you down. Check out what Avalara has built specifically for growing brands at avalara.watsonweekly.com. Speaking of owning a lane, USPS and DHL have signed a partnership. They inked a $10 billion long-term contract for shipping lanes, meaning the last mile from DHL. DHL and USPS, just to catch you up, have been long-term partners for the last 25 years. DHL and Pitney Bowes have almost been, in some cases, you know, I had a former career at Pitney Bowes.
Yeah.
They're almost like this USPS consolidator companies where historically they haven't had a lot of their own assets, particularly in the last mile, but you could package them and you can get services and they're sort of an integrator that had USPS as like one of their key backbones. And this sort of locks in that agreement for a long-term contract. DHL handles the pickup, sorting, and transport. And then USPS handles the final mile through all of their, which is the most expensive part of the journey. They didn't disclose exactly how many years the agreement is, but they've worked together for a long time. I think, frankly, both companies need this. DHL needs this because cost of labor, cost of shipping goes up. UPS and FedEx, obviously they're not going to partner with DHL. And so there are only so many options they could cobble together, like maybe buy a regional network or work with USPS to the longer your agreement, the lower your rates. And so it makes sense not to go year to year on this.
Correct.
On the other side, USPS obviously needs partners. There are like two big trends in the last 5 years in the supply chain market is that a lot of the last mile work that USPS used to do for Amazon, for UPS, for FedEx. UPS used to have a product called Mail Innovation. FedEx had SmartPost. A lot of that work, some of it still goes to the USPS, but a lot of it has been sort of insourced as people trying to densify their networks, meaning like, we want more partners go on our trucks and not outsource to other people because that's where the money is. That's where the cost
margin.
Is.
It's all about the margin.
Yeah. Dollar bills, y'all.
Dollar bills. Yeah.
So that's a strategy. And I think USPS seems like it's going to keep losing share to Amazon. It needs to lock in good partners and DHL gets something predictable, whether this is the kind of predictability you want, because USPS hasn't always been known for the best service, but it is going to be stable and they're going to be able to count on a specific set of rates for a number of years. So
yes. And like you said, Rick, the USPS desperately needs this. Postmaster General David Steiner sounding the alarm bells. They're going to run out of money by early 2027. Oof. Unless Congress lifts this borrowing cap that's been frozen at $15 billion since the 1990s.
Yeah.
He's asking for $34.5 billion. And when you look at the USPS, their losses are pretty significant. So, you know, they don't even have the cash, essentially, to keep this going. And the DHL thing, while it's meaningful and it's important because it does guarantee some volume here, it doesn't necessarily save them when you look at the balance sheet. So
exactly.
What do you think the USPS is going to do?
You know, look, I mean, they're really hamstrung by Congress. If you look at their parcel business, any parcel business is like thin margin business, right? And so they're not making a lot of money before. About 15 years ago, they had to start offering these extended like retirement benefits for all this. That really is what put them in the hole. And since then, they've been kind of underwater. Congress is the only one that can bail them out of it because Congress sort of like put them in the straitjacket to begin with. Right. And I think a lot of people forget about that. Like the USPS is just always wasting money. Like the parcel business, like by itself, it's not that way. It's all this like, hate to say it, like this, like the contracts, it's a labor contract issue, I would say, like from an 80-20 rule point of view.
Yeah. So we got a little bit of bloat.
Yeah.
Sitch.
Yeah. Exactly. There are not many companies that offer like long-term pensions anymore. And there's a reason for it because it just like puts you at a structural competitive disadvantage.
Yes. It's a lot of cash out the door.
Yeah.
And
you're like a contractor and you're for good or bad, you're like, you're replaceable. And
that's right. You know, 1099.
AI's watching your ass. You can't take up, you're peeing in cups and things.
No.
You can't do that at the USPS.
Pretty soon, we're going to have some like autonomous driving happening. It's a whole thing.
Exactly.
So yes, it's all about the margin. Well, for now, you know, we've got some new besties in the House, and that's great. We'll actually see what happens on the pitch to Congress and if they essentially can continue to stay afloat beyond just this deal.
Our next story is Salesforce revitalization. Is commerce cool again at Salesforce? To catch you up, Commerce Cloud for the last 10, 15 years has been a little bit quiet since the Demandware acquisition by Salesforce. Salesforce has alternatively like invested in the platform, like for the several years post-acquisition. This was like 2013 timeframe from my memory. Yep. Salesforce was still doing well with the platform. And then it suddenly just sort of like forgot it had a commerce platform. And then it tried to sort of like shut down Demandware by building this alternative platform.
Yes.
Like Commerce on Core, which is always a name for it. Sometimes it was called Lightning. They had a number of code names for it. But anyway, they abandoned that. They were like, Demandware pretty good. And these people aren't going to replatform anyway. So why are we freaking kidding ourselves?
Correct.
They were like, Demandware, it's going to be around forever. Let's build on it. So they acquired a company called Predict Spring in the last 2 years, run by a guy, Nitin Mangtani. He's actually going to be on the show. You're going to see a podcast drop. We had one of his lieutenants on the program, Leonard Stevens, in the last week or so. Check out that from their new Agentforce, Salesforce Next release. But anyway, they are trying to keep up with the Joneses on the agent side. They made an acquisition, number not released, called Contentful. Contentful is a content marketing system. It's a headful and headless. I think you can use it in any configuration you want, really. You can build your own custom UI or you can use it just sort of out of the box. But a lot of big companies rely on Contentful. And so this is one of a string of acquisitions that Salesforce has done in the last couple of years.
And actually, let's break down those acquisitions because there's different ways you can grow. You can grow the regular way.
Yeah.
Like more customers, strong product market fit, continue to build and grow on some of the products that you sell kind of as core, or you can acquire a lot of different things, bring them together, take advantage of those customers, try to create this integrated network effect where you have some customers over here, you're upselling them or expanding to some of the other solutions that you've acquired. So in 2018, it was MuleSoft, Tableau in 2019, Slack, which I would probably say is the darling and probably one of the best, better acquisitions that they've made in 2021.
They haven't bollocked it up totally yet.
No, she's still cooking. Yeah. And Slack is still here to stay. I don't know many companies that are like, I'm out of here with Slack.
Yeah.
Own company, own backup in 2024. That was a $1.9 billion acquisition, some data backup and protection. Informatica in
November of
2025.
That was a big one, you know, especially in the retail space.
Yeah, yeah. And then Predict Spring. But then you've got these series of AI and commerce acquisitions that are not necessarily disclosed in terms of what they spent, but are going to, like you said, this whole agentic revamp that mm-hmm. Salesforce is bringing as they're trying to remain relevant in this space of AI when SaaS stocks are basically getting killed. And I'm sure lots of people would love to just rip out Salesforce. They pay a lot of money to them, build their own CRMs, et cetera. So yeah, like convergence.
If you go through the list, I mean, just to kind of like hand the baton, Convergence, Regrello, Simulate, and now Contentful, you know, I think on its own in commerce and AI, Salesforce from a sort of standing start, which is where they were, I would say before Nitin, the new GM of Salesforce Commerce Cloud and Retail came in, there wasn't a lot of interesting things going on at Salesforce. And he's trying to change that and like adding in a bunch of talent that has AI expertise as well as commerce expertise seems to be part of the strategy. And I think Contentful, the whispers, they haven't disclosed with the acquisition. I expect they will have to disclose how much they paid for it. It's estimated by the information to be in a billion to a billion and a half. I'm sure there's an earnout on top of that. They have 4,800 brands on the platform, Jess.
That's
the good thing about acquisitions, obviously, there are multiple ways to grow. An acquisition helps you if you have a big established customer base that's diversified.
Right.
And everyone needs content. Not everyone. Yeah. I mean, the funny thing is like, everyone needs content. Not everyone needs commerce.
Correct.
And so as a result, if your agents are building new content, having a home to keep it all is a useful asset for Salesforce. And by the way, they have relationships with all these brands, really great brands that they can resell all their other stuff.
Right, exactly. It's all about getting the at-bats. And if you can lower the cost of acquisition, in theory, because you don't have to have as many people pounding the pavement, the steak dinners get expensive, as we've talked about. So can you court these clients that you've acquired from something like Contentful and start to identify the places where you can resell or upsell or expand in various solutions that you have? And I'm sure that's the investment thesis that they've done to make sure the math is mathing and they're going to extract the value out of it. What I found interesting is when we look at their earnings recently, we talk about they're trying to make commerce cool again. I believe that because commerce and marketing cloud really have been dogs in the portfolio.
Data has been a hit and then commerce has been flagging.
Commerce has really been like slow to no growth. They talked about collectively those being a drag on their P&L revenue, you know, decelerating, sluggish growth, somewhere like lower than 2%.
Yeah, like down 1%, down 2%, something like that.
Yes, exactly. Which cough, cough could be zero or negative, you know, kind of like around. When you say around, we're like, what are we talking about? What's the swing? It's like when I go and, you know, you tell the doctor, like, how many drinks have you had in a week or whatever.
Barely any.
What I think is, you know, probably worth calling out is, you've said this too. You go and you look at like even the Salesforce booths at Shop Talk or an event in 2025, it was like Slack, Tableau. It was like, where commerce at? It's not even been in the mix. And so they started to like wave the white flag to Shopify. Or do you think that this is now a sign that like, we're back, baby, and we're coming for you in a new way?
If an acquisition could be both a defensive maneuver and an offensive maneuver, I think it's valuable. I mean, I think Salesforce, like there are a number of these brands are on Shopify now, and a bunch of them are on Salesforce too. And so in these shared customers, Salesforce has a way to be relevant to these customers. Shopify, as good as it is as a commerce platform, it doesn't go deep in a lot of these enterprises because it doesn't have the infrastructure on the back office that Salesforce has with CRM and service and marketing and data. And all these things, Shopify is like commerce. And if you notice, as part of this announcement about, you know, Agentforce and these things, Salesforce is positioning this as like, if your agents are only narrowly siloed to commerce,
yes.
And like, Why do you use that word siloed to commerce? Basically, that's like a subtle dig at Shopify. Like whatever you think it's going to work or not, this seems to be the play. Like we have marketing, sales, service, commerce all across your enterprise. Shopify only has commerce. And so as a result, like that's a great little business you have there, but we have a much bigger operation here. Whether you think it's great or not, what do you think of Commerce Cloud? It's basically still, you know, warmed over Demandware, but it's like, it's new and revitalized now.
We put lipstick on that whole thing.
It's great. It's great.
Demandware was a great product. I just think it's been...
It's a fresh color, though.
It is. It's just pretty.
Can change your whole outfit.
It sure can, actually. If you heard of the color draping situation, Rick, like that's a whole thing where you go and you figure out like what color should you be wearing.
I think
this is like what... the page of the playbook they're taking. So, you know, another company that this reminds me of that's kind of acquired their way to growth and getting in different markets is Oracle. Mm. So if we did like a comparison between Oracle strategy, which is like buy revenue, buy verticals, you know, they bought NetSuite, they've, you know, expanded in like a lot of different ways. What do you think is like the compare contrast when you look at the two?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, obviously, Mark Bino was one of the biggest Larry Ellison disciples for years. They kind of broke off and, you know, Oracle still runs on a lot of the back end of Salesforce. So the company's never really separated that much and they're still so sort of friendly. Salesforce tends not to grow organically, meaning like, can we just grow our existing products as they are? And they tend to acquire bolt-on and make this suite strategy, which is very similar to what Oracle and SAP have done in the past. Yeah. And so like, if we can become this, you know, great modern software company with these big things, the challenge is most acquisitions just don't work, period.
Like, true.
And
integration, part of the thesis, never really happened.
Synergies, whatever the hell a synergy is, I still haven't figured out in all my years of being in business.
She's a beaut, Clark.
What the hell a synergy is? Define the word synergy for me, Jess.
Oh man, it's a beautiful word. It's where dreams are built and they also go to die.
It looks great on a spreadsheet.
It looks good. It papers and it pencils. And like I said, you can make so much happen on a spreadsheet. It's a wonderful thing. But yeah, I think the synergies are you find these overlapping pieces where the 1 + 1 = 3. We love to say that.
I love that one. That's another great one.
We're better together. We're going to be better together than we are apart. Like we can do things that we'd never achieved before when you just bring these things together in this harmonistic way. But yeah, I think that's really what they start to do is look at those overlapping areas, look at the places where there's gaps in market or strategy, and you look to that acquiring company or the other company to help you fill them. The hard part is now you've got to bring an organization in. You've got to look at customers. Who's going to own the relationship with those customers? Do you just have a bunch of Salesforce reps just like swarming the Contentful?
Yeah, we can talk about talent for a little bit because over the last 4 or 5 years, I mean, Salesforce has lost a lot of talent either forcibly or just by attrition. I mean, obviously everyone's had layoffs just because Wall Street thinks it's cool. And a lot of those reps have gone to Shopify. Shopify seems to be, I mean, God bless them. They're like laying off people every week, it seems like. And a lot of the Salesforce, a lot of their people were ex-Salesforce people that were brought in by Bobby Morrison.
That's right.
A lot of those people, they ain't there no more. Now, some of them, I expect, are back at Salesforce now. And I expect maybe that could be even more.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's like a boomerang.
I think it is a boomerang.
We're in Australia.
Yes, we love it. We love a good boomerang story because it happens. Has Salesforce become more disciplined because of the 2023 activist investor situation where you had Elliott Management, Value Act, which basically pushed so hard on Salesforce to rein in the spending, improve margins, which started this spree of Salesforce cutting costs, the buybacks. They returned $21 billion to shareholders. They started to disband the M&A committee. So it's kind of interesting. Like they did hit a bit of a pause button. And then the Informatica deal in 2025 brought them back into the acquisition game.
Turned this new strategy on, which clearly they're still on this tear. And I think I agree with you. It does signal that this sort of activist investor worries are kind of in the rearview mirror.
Okay.
And you see, and I think a lot of CEOs are acting this way. People were acting like speaking on the boldometer Like, people are acting more boldly in this age of AI because it's almost like change or die. And yeah. I think you have these yeah. situations where you know the industry is going to get reinvented. Why not us? And so right. good bet, bad bet. Like, we need to make some bets. And so that's never a bad thing as long as you're willing to sort of like recognize your mistakes.
Like you've always said, it's better to like take steps forward than go yes. into turtle shell mode. Salesforce cannot afford to do that. I gotta just push on the whole marketing cloud piece because we talked about commerce. And what is up with marketing cloud? Is that it's been a place that was a bright spot for Salesforce. They've started to sunset some products there, like their Marketing Cloud Advertising Studio products, Ad Studio, Active Audiences. Do you think that they're a little concerned because there is some disruption happening in the AI space? What do you feel like this means for Marketing Cloud, given the
I think it's interesting. Comments? I mean, they've obviously made marketing acquisitions over the years. One of the biggest things that was a founding piece of their marketing cloud was their acquisition of ExactTarget back in the day. And then they acquired a B2B marketing company. I think Marketo, did they acquire?
Yeah.
And a lot of these companies are getting a little bit older in the tooth, especially in the AI era. So similar to like a Simulate, they're looking for these AI native companies to come in. I wouldn't be surprised if like some of these companies like not a Klaviyo, they're probably big, but like Attentive comes to mind. It sounds crazy, but like
I could see
stranger
it.
Things have happened. Like if you want like a modern platform that you can then start selling and then you can start to sunset some of these legacy assets and give customers a path forward, it could be an interesting way that they go back to their core marketing that's sort of like adjacent to commerce, but it's still like Salesforce is a CRM at its core.
So
there are different types of companies that need for CRMs. You need like the B2B company, which is where Salesforce has typically been along with service, or B2C companies, which is where Klaviyo has really tried to build their lane in B2C.
Right. And then you kind of have the whole needs that companies still have around a customer data platform. And Salesforce has tried to like play in that lane in some way, but their pricing models really cut out companies who wanted to use them in that capacity. When you're billing on usage, you want to be able to retain all this data about your customers. You want to be able to use and leverage it at any given time. And they basically kind of are forcing companies out of that. I'm curious if like Marketing Cloud will have a win back or a resurgence where it's really been struggling.
I think more acquisitions are in the offering. And so I don't think it will be organically because I don't think a lot of these platforms aren't that modern and there are a lot of customer complaints about them.
Yes.
In the Shopify universe and slightly above, it seems to have settled into, there's a lot of competition in this space. And it's like on the low end, it seems to have consolidated about Klaviyo. Above that, Braze is starting to make a lot of progress. They IPO'd a couple of years ago. They're not so big that Salesforce obviously could acquire them. They can acquire very big companies. Braze could be on the table. You have Attentive, like Cordial and Insider just acquired Bluecore. Like there's a lot of competition. Bloomreach is out there. And although there's a lot of overlap with Salesforce and probably some of these companies wouldn't want to, there's going to be consolidation in this.
There has to be. And we're probably not even seeing some of the emerging AI technology that they could grab on the cheap as it's coming up, like you said, and replace and modernize some of the core tech stack. So we may not say yet that Salesforce is back, but man, they are.
They're trying hard.
They're trying
hard. It's like the engine that could.
Props to them. Yeah, it is. The little engine that could. So don't count them out. We'll see if they can make commerce happen like, in Mean Girls, she tried to make Fetch happen.
I love it. Well, that's our show this week. We appreciate you listening in. Any last words for us, Jess?
I'll just end as we always do. Stay classy, be bold, and have an amazing weekend, everyone.
See you next time, folks.
We'll be back.